Welcome to 15 Minutes with Charlie. I'm your host, Charlie Meacham. I want to help you become a better speaker and writer. In each podcast episode, I'll explore how anecdotes can help your communication become more effective. I'll suggest anecdotes from my book, Total Anecdotal, and guests then will react according to their own experiences. Today, I'm interviewing Julie Inkster. Julie is one of the greatest players in the history of the LPGA. She's a member of the LPGA Hall of Fame and the World Golf Hall of Fame. Most recently, she's been named captain of the U.S. Solheim Cup team for the third straight time. No player has ever been so honored. So please enjoy this interview with Julie. She's a dear friend, and I must say, has a wicked sense of humor, which will probably show itself before we're done today. But Julie, we're happy to welcome you to this podcast. And what I'm going to do is quote a few anecdotes out of the book, because for those who haven't followed the earlier podcasts, I have written a book called Total Anecdotal. And it's a sort of a collection, a dictionary of anecdotes that you can use in speaking or writing to make you a more effective communicator. So
I need that. That's I will be buying, purchasing that book. Maybe since we're such good friends, you could just slide one over to me.
Very
for
good.
Free.
I'll give you one.
Okay.
Autograph.
Okay.
So I'll just quote a few of the anecdotes and ask how that relates to your life or what your reaction is.
Okay.
Now the first one has to do with when Babe Ruth in 1930, was signed to a two-year contract for $130,000. The then general manager, Ed Barrow, proudly exclaimed, "No one will ever be paid more." What's your thinking or your thoughts on athlete salaries?
Well, let me just, so I won my first LPGA tournament in 1983. I played in five tournaments at the end of the season. I got my card in August and was qualified for five tournaments. And I beat Kathy Whitworth, who was the queen of LPGA golf.
Yeah.
And my first check was $22,500. And I thought I was a millionaire.
Sure.
And little did I know that I was going to raise two daughters that spend that in a day. So, but I never forget, I took my parents were there and I took them out to dinner and I go, "Mom, Dad, I want to buy you dinner." And they go, "Julie, it's going to go really fast. So just let us buy dinner and you keep that $22,500. And it's amazing how salaries have gone up. But you know what? Sports is a big business. Makes a lot of money.
That's exactly right. And no sign of it stopping.
No.
That reminds me of a story of one of the great legends of the LPGA, Patty Berg. I asked her one time, what was the first money she ever got for an event? And, you know, Patty spoke nasal. And she said, "The commissioner, it was in your hometown in Cincinnati. I won an event at the Cincinnati Country Club. And they paid me $500 for the win." And I said, "Patty, that's ridiculous." She said, "Yeah, but that was during the war and they paid me with a war bond." For those of our viewers who are too young to know,
yes,
you could buy a $500 war bond. I'm sorry, $50 war bond for $37.50. And you had to wait 10 years. I bet Patty did.
Oh, yeah.
This next one is under the category of dealing with adversity. And I'm sure this is made up, but there's an old line that says, illegitimati non carborundum. And it's translated as, don't let the bastards grind you down. And I'm sure you've had some times when you've been playing golf when you had to really scramble.
Yeah, I mean, my whole game is I don't really hit the ball the best or putt the best, but I'm a grinder and I just grind my way to victory. And you know what? I don't really sweat the little things. And I know that drives my husband crazy, but I just kind of move what's in front of me and what do I have to do to accomplish.
You know, I've heard the term grinding a lot, but what does a grinder mean?
Grinder means you don't give up. You know, you could be, you know, in the outhouse and the green be 50 yards away and you're going to think you're going to get it up and down. Okay. And that's kind of what I did. I mean, when I was on, but when I wasn't on, I just somehow scrambled to an even par or one or two under, and then something clicked, and that's what that, I mean. I think every great player, I'm not saying I'm great, but every great player has had those rounds. And you hear Tiger say, "I didn't have my A game."
Oh yeah.
I mean, you really, in four rounds, you don't really have your A game. Maybe nine holes.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You got to figure out, you know, what do I need to do? It might not look pretty, but at the end of the day, you know, 10 years from now, no one knows. You just have the trophy.
Jack Nicklaus made a comment in his podcast that you know pretty quickly, probably even on the range, whether you've got your game or not. And if you don't, then you don't try to change everything. Just work with
it. Yeah. I mean, yeah, you got to sometimes just go with what you got.
Yeah.
Exactly. You know, if you're hitting a draw, play that draw. If you're hitting a fade, play that fade. But, you know, Jack, he was probably the ultimate at that. You know, you could just see in his eyes that he was going to will that ball in the hole. And I think I did that a lot.
This is under the category in the book of sense of humor. And it's a limerick, which I've always loved. It goes like this. He was a very cautious lad who never romped or played. He didn't smoke, he didn't drink, or even kiss a maid. So when he upped and passed away, insurance was denied. For since they said he'd never lived, they said he'd never die. So, sense of humor is important, isn't it?
It is. And I've been blessed with my father's sense of humor. We're a very sarcastic family, but we have fun. You know, you're the king of the one-liners too, and I love a good one-liner. So I think that's why we've gotten along so well, is we never take each other too seriously. If you can't laugh at yourself, you know, something's wrong. So
that, to me, is the key. Best sense of humor never is at the expense of somebody else. It's sort of making fun of the human condition, if you will.
Exactly.
And I can't tell you how many tense business situations I've been in where I've relieved it with a little joke or comment.
Or an anecdote.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that's what the book is all about.
Yeah. It's amazing, though, how all of a sudden, you know, someone says something and it just pops in your head, something. And you just spit it out, and it's funny. And
the older you get, the more of those
are
in your head.
Oh,
there's something for every taste.
Yeah.
Henny Youngman was one of the funniest stand-up comedians. My wife and I used to laugh at him. Passed away now, but he had more funny lines. And this one I've always loved. And this I want to ask you about because of your marriage to Brian. Youngman said, "You know what it means when you come home at night, walk in the door, and you're greeted by the spouse, by your spouse, with a big kiss and a martini. You know what it means? It means you're in the wrong house."
Did Brian write that? Because he would turn around like, "What's going on?
What's going on?" Well, you and Brian have had a great relationship, and I think that's because you explain that.
Well, I think he really has been very supportive of what I do, and he doesn't ever need to be in the forefront. But you know, he's got a great sense of humor, and he's a great dad. I'm telling you right now, if he would have thought of that, he would have wrote that line, because if I got up and made him breakfast, he thinks I ran the car into the garage or something. I'm buttering him up for something.
He must have been involved with raising the girls, too.
Oh, yeah. You know, and he was great. You know, if I was gone, he'd get him up to school and get them dressed and get them out the door. He didn't mind being the dad or the mom or whatever. You know, but I think to raise a family these days, you need a tag team. You know, it just can't be just one person.
But he, I know several occasions, he would come out, carry the bag for you on this particular. So he enjoyed that part of it as well.
Oh, yeah. But, I mean, when we got done after, you know, he'd come out for, you know, a specialty tournament in caddy or maybe once a year in caddy. And then we get done and we hug and we both look at each other and go, "Boy, we're glad we don't do that 26 weeks out of the year." Because we would have never made it.
Isn't that true?
I don't know how they do it. I don't know how these husband wives do it.
And fathers on a kid.
Oh, yeah.
And at some point, you just want to say, "Come on, Dad.
Yeah.
Leave her alone."
Yeah. But, you know, he's always been very supportive, and it's been there. But him caddying for me would have not gone well. We would need a lot of antidotes to get through that marriage.
Did he ever really try to influence your game?
Yeah, I mean, he taught me before we had kids. And then once we had kids, we'd go down there and we'd talk about the kids and we wouldn't really get much work done. And I was kind of at the crossroads. Am I going to keep playing or maybe stay at home mom or what? And so we decided to get some outside help. And Mike McGettrick was right there and started working with him. And you know, he really liked Mike and he never stepped on Mike's foot. And but if I right now, if I go out there and say, hey, I'm doing this, he knows my swing that, sure, you know, so, sure. You know, he knew when to step in and step back. And
right.
I think he never really tried to influence me and my game.
Great. This is the final one, and this is under a category in the book of what is really important. There's a wonderful quiz, which somebody said was written by Charles Schulz, but it was not. The Schulz family denied that he'd written it, but they were proud of it. And here's the first quiz. Name five of the wealthiest people in the world. Name five Heisman Trophy winners. Name five winners of the Miss America contest. Name 10 people who won the Nobel or Pulitzer Prize. Name the last half dozen Academy Award winners, male and female, and name the last 10 winners of the World Series. How did you do? Probably not very well. Now, the next six questions go like this. Name three teachers who aided your journey through school. Name three friends who have helped you through a difficult time. Name five people who have taught you worthwhile things. Name a few people who have made you feel special. Name five people who you enjoy being with. Name several heroes whose lives have inspired you. I guess the lesson here is obvious. Those are the important people. But have there been those kind of people in your life?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's just starting with my parents. I mean, they were, my dad was a fireman. My mom was a stay-at-home mom. You know, we didn't have much money. I didn't know that, you know.
Yeah.
But they were, every step of the way with my brothers and myself, they were by our side, whether it be a game or guitar or whatever.
Yeah.
And, you know, I learned a lot of parenting from them. You've been a huge influence on my life and, Marilyn a little bit more, but, we've had, I've known you probably for 30 years.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
It's been great. And, but you know, I've, you know, my daughters are a huge influence with me. You know, my parents, my friend, you know, I have such a great group of friends at home that knew nothing about golf.
Right.
And, you know, and they've been so supportive of my career. So I've been blessed with great friendship, but, I think the person also makes the friends. I mean, you know, it's being open and wanting to be friends with somebody. And I've always had a great group of friends that I enjoy being with.
Did you have idols in sports when you were growing up?
You know what? I didn't. I mean, my dad was a baseball player. So, yeah. I mean, I was a huge baseball fan, you know, Juan Marichal and Tito Fuentes. And, I was more baseball than it was golf. You know, probably when I started to play golf, you know, I probably, you know, Nancy Lopez or Joanne Carner,
yeah,
or, you know, someone like that, that I loved the way they played. And I learned a lot from Nancy. I learned a lot from Mr. Palmer just watching him and the way he dealt with crowds and stuff.
Not just how to play the game.
Yeah, exactly.
Play
how to
role.
Be a pro.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And, you know, and sometimes I was good at it and sometimes, you know, I had those bad days. But,
sure,
you know, that's, but I think where I am right now in my life, I look back on it and for me, I never aspired to be a pro. I fell into it and it's been the best rewarding career.
And still is.
Yeah, it still is.
And I know how much the Solheim Cup captaincy means to you. Say about that. Talk about that.
Well, I mean, just being on the Solheim team was an amazing honor. And I've been fortunate. I've done a lot of good things in golf, but being a captain of the Solheim Cup team and being part of, 16 ladies, three captains, myself, and 12,
yeah.
And trying to come to a goal. I've learned so much about myself. It's about leading and, you know, you lead how you want to be led. And that's, I try to do that. You know, it's not a dictatorship. I ask for help. And I think they appreciate that.
If they do what you say in the final analysis,
once
you better. Yeah. When I say a vodka tonic, give me a vodka tonic.
Tom Callahan and I have always been good friends. And not too long ago, we were exchanging emails about something. And he mentioned that he had seen, at Arnold's memorial service, had seen both you and Nancy.
Yeah.
And he said, Julie, Bill Walsh used to have, sometimes get in a real bad way with his golf. And he said, I've seen Julie perform, as he put it, golf version of the Heimlich maneuver.
Oh, yeah.
By phone, by telephone, to Bill Walsh. What's that about?
Bill Walsh is a great guy and a great mind. And I just kind of got to know him playing golf. And he always asked me for some help. And whether it was right or wrong, he listened. And I learned a lot from him, just the way he led and the respect the team had for him. Oh. I mean, he was probably not the most warm and fuzzy guy. But he knew what he's talking about, and people respected that.
Most of the great coaches aren't warm and fuzzy.
Yeah.
They have respect,
mm-hmm.
and maybe even some of them are loved in a way, but they're never arm around them. Mm-hmm.
Like Paul Brown.
Paul, I asked Otto Graham, who was a great quarterback on the Browns teams. I said, when you screwed up, did Paul yell and scream at you? Charlie, never that. He said, if you did something wrong, came off the field, Paul would take one look at you and then walk away. You're beneath contempt.
Yeah, I know. I mean, sometimes you don't need to say anything.
That's right. You know you
messed up.
Sure.
And so I think Eddie DiBartola was really the kind of the Nancy Lopez of the football team because he hugged everybody and, you know, made it warm and friendly. And
it can be made to work.
Yeah.
But if you look at Belichick and the great college coaches,
mm-hmm.
and other in any sport, really,
yeah.
they're usually pretty tough guys.
Yeah, Bill Parcell, he wasn't warm and fuzzy,
But there are guys. I'm trying to think. Eric Parsegian.
Mm-hmm.
Now he could be tougher than a $2 steak, but the players loved him.
Mm-hmm.
And we're digressing now, but. He and I got to know one another pretty well because we both went to Miami University. We were on a board together we overlapped 5 or 6 years. And I asked him one night, having cocktails after the board meeting, I said, Era, what makes a great coach? And he said, well, I don't know about others, but he said, if you're asking why I've been successful, I plan 5 plays out. Now, he said, a lot of coaches plan 5 plays out. But if the second play doesn't work, they don't know where to go. He said, in my case, I tried to know if second play didn't work, what the third one ought to be. So I thought that was really insightful.
He was one step ahead.
And he also inspired players.
Mm-hmm.
He said, you know, Charlie, in high school, you can inspire them, but it's craziness. They don't, you know, they're all...
Mm-hmm.
In the pros, you can't play that. But in college, you can really inspire players.
Yeah.
And, of course, at Notre Dame in particular.
Yeah.
Thanks for joining me for today's conversation. If you'd like to listen to more episodes, please visit totalanecdotal.co or search for 15 Minutes with Charlie in your podcasting app. If you are enjoying the show, you should check out my book, Total Anecdotal, a fun guide to help you become a better speaker and writer. Learn more at totalanecdotal.co/book. That's totalanecdotal.co/book. Or it's available through Amazon or Barnes & Noble and perhaps your local bookstore.